Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes. Welcome to this episode of the Australian Investors Podcast. This is actually a cross post from our Australian Finance Podcast series where Kate Campbell and I sat down with you-know-who Drew Meredith over summer. This episode is a bit of fun because Drew takes us through three dividend income shares as well as a bonus which can help drive passive income in a portfolio. This is a bit more of a basic or light-on episode because we tend to focus on intermediate subjects over on the Australian Finance Podcast, but I figured you'd like it. It's a bit of infotainment on your drive home. So I hope you enjoy this episode featuring none other than Kate Campbell from the Australian Finance Podcast and our good friend Drew Meredith of Wattle Partners. Kate Campbell, welcome to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast.
Wonderful to be back for another episode in our summer series.
Yes, we have a very special guest in the studio with us today. Drew Meredith, how are you going?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
For folks who don't listen to the Australian Investors Podcast, that's the yellow one in your podcast player. Drew and I co-host that every week. So this is the first time you've ever, in the history of us knowing each other, appeared on the Finance Podcast.
First crossover.
Yeah, you had to walk, what, 5 feet down to the studio?
Into the same studio.
Different chair, I think maybe different chair.
Yeah, different chair, more professional.
And
yeah.
You're a financial advisor.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that for?
I started in 2005, so 17 years now.
It's a long period of time.
A very long period. A lot of change during that period.
So were you like 27, 28, something like
that? Yeah, I started when I was 12.
So what are we talking about?
Flare all your guests.
Don't look a day over 30, though.
No. So today we're talking about dividend income stocks and a few different ideas and what they are and how to find some of that information. So we've got Drew, an actual qualified financial advisor, to chat us through all of this in today's episode. Mm.
Deal with a lot of retirees, so dividend stocks are completely central to that discussion.
So this is your bread and butter.
Yep. Right in the wheelhouse, as the saying would go.
Yeah.
Is it possible, just as a very broad strokes, is it possible to get 5% income from a portfolio sustainably?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a short answer, but I mean, we work on, I think I've said on the Investors Podcast a few times, we work on this very basic assumption that a balanced portfolio, so broadly balanced between growth and defensive assets, you can expect 5% per annum. And that's probably changed a lot in the last 12 months alone. Mm. So term deposit rates have increased. Dividend yields, everything is kind of increasing significantly.
Yeah. Well, you can get over 4% from term deposits alone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So many more options.
A few core tenets to dividend investing. One is obviously we want to have balanced portfolios. So just to confirm, you wouldn't build a whole portfolio out of just dividend stocks, would you? Like everyone's wealth in dividend stocks?
No, not at all. So the way we tend to build portfolios and the people we build portfolios for are generally retirees or those nearing retirement or want a passive income. And the key there is if you're going to have that passive income, it needs multiple sources of return or income. You don't want it all to be from, say, the banking sector or the resources sector or just from shares in general.
Yeah,
you split across asset classes.
So you want like cash, you want some bonds, all that sort of stuff. Maybe some property, depending on the client.
You want to know the income's coming regardless of what's going on elsewhere in the economy and in the market.
Mm.
It's key.
And a question we get a lot is, why do some companies pay dividends and some don't? And why do Australian dividends seem to be a lot higher than maybe our US ones?
Yeah, the tough question. I mean, a big reason for dividends being high is probably the nature of the tax system here, where dividends are more favorably taxed than capital gains. Whereas if you head over to the US, the capital gains are taxed more attractively than dividends over there. So that's why things like on-market buybacks of shares in the US are more popular versus big, chunky, fully franked dividends. And yeah, franking credits are central to that entire discussion.
Yeah. So franking credits being just Australian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some companies pay them, some companies don't.
Yep.
Do you naturally look for companies that or shares that do pay dividends?
I think you want a combination of both. And you want, I mean, there's two things you want from every investment, income or growth. Some are going to give you more income and some are going to give you more growth. I mean, the reason one company wouldn't pay a dividend, generally you'd think, is because they can invest that money better themselves. By paying a dividend, they're saying they've got nothing better to do with it and they're paying it out to shareholders.
Yeah.
That's the way, you know, macroeconomics 101 would probably explain it. But it does get to a point in Australia where if you cut your dividend, your share price is going to struggle. So
because people demand dividends, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But I'd say the way we invest into ASX shares, it is pretty, I'd say it's probably 80% focused on the income they can produce, which can offset the lower income you get from overseas shares and other parts of the portfolio.
Mm. Is focusing on investing in companies that pay a dividend usually something that you look at for older clients or people close to retirement? Like should I even be looking at dividend stocks?
I think it's appropriate for everyone, but it's probably more about the balance. So if you're younger and you don't need to draw an income from your portfolio, then you'd probably be more interested in making sure that compounds or even reinvesting the dividends.
Yeah.
Or investing into companies, you know, a CSL versus a Telstra, where one pays nothing in dividend but can constantly reinvest in itself. So I think you'd probably just tilt more towards those companies that are growing versus the ones that are paying out all their profits.
Yeah. Because that's when they've reached maturity and they might not be investing enough for growth.
Yeah, and you still want companies that are paying dividends to be in reinvesting, because essentially if they're not reinvesting themselves, they won't go anywhere, which is the biggest challenge. That's why your payout ratios is probably something you've discussed on here as well.
You know, well, it's interesting. I think we have. What does that mean?
There you go. You bring up a term. You've got to be able to explain it, Drew.
Well, essentially the amount of dividend that they're paying out as a portion of their profit. So what's left over for the company to use afterwards and how much has been reinvested? Banks historically have paid out anywhere from 70 to 90% of every year's profit in dividends, not leaving much to invest. And it's kind of reflected in how they've struggled to grow over the last few years. And then someone like CSL pays out less. I think it's probably like 30% of profit in the form of dividends. So living a lot more within the business.
Yeah, but they've got the R&D, like research and development. And
like $1 billion a year in research and development.
Yeah, whereas the banks probably don't need that as much because they're already quite mature here in Australia, can't really grow.
They
probably need it, but with so many pension funds and like superannuation funds demanding dividends,
yeah,
they'd probably have a lot of influence on like what the board does or doesn't do with its money.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. Probably another thing to mention is that whether you reinvest it or you don't, if you get paid a dividend, you still have to pay tax.
Exactly. Yeah. So the reinvestment is just you deciding once you've received that dividend to go buy more shares automatically in that company. And it will, that plus the franking credit will always be have to be in your tax return.
Do you have a preference for whether you do like the dividend reinvestment plan or DRP versus just taking the dividend as cash?
We think investors should have the option, and rather than constantly rebalancing, the risk of reinvesting in that individual stock is if one stock performs significantly better than another one, the size of that holding will keep increasing. We prefer to have it in cash, rebalance. We review every portfolio or share every quarter and then rebalancing and deploying that cash each quarter.
Yeah, okay.
Making a deliberate decision to buy rather than a forced decision to reinvest.
Yeah, but these are on quite large balances that you're talking about.
Generally, yeah. And it probably would be different, say, for a pension, an index fund that, you know, you're buying iShares or the S&P 500 and trying to ride the, you know, index for 20 years and grow your capital that way, then you're more likely to reinvest versus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just quickly on that, so do you use ETFs and managed funds more in a portfolio versus, say, direct stocks?
probably one third, two thirds. So across the asset classes, Australian shares, we do directly, as we think
you can. So you buy the individual stocks?
Yep.
Yep.
We think you can replicate parts of or slightly improve the income compared to the ASX if you do it directly, mm-hmm. And kind of offset some of the weightings that you get if you just rely on an index fund.
Because you can do that for your clients well. Through a platform where it's all kind of like managed, right? You can say, sell this one, buy that one, sell this one, buy that one.
Yeah. If through a platform all the dividends come in, you rebalance quite easily.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for like the US market or global markets, you might be using managed funds or ETFs.
Yeah, generally. So we're more and more looking at a passive index core, so an ETF core or quite a cheap S&P 500, sometimes the ASX 200, and then using direct holdings in Australia or managed funds or other ETFs overseas or exchange traded managed ETMFs yep. as well to keep the acronyms going.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, but looking at a passive core, and I think it's significantly more difficult to pick stocks or invest in stocks overseas directly and get a reasonable level of diversification compared to being able to do it in Australia.
Mm. So even the professionals use ETFs.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, we do. We say we're product agnostic. So whatever we will work out what exposure we want. So it could be Asia and we'll go and look at all the options to buy that. And it will start at the lowest cost. And if we think it should be active, then we'll find an active, but always try to look at the lowest cost. And at the moment, that's all ETFs.
Mm-hmm. Asia, huh? Mm-hmm. Good example. This is something that we disagree.
I didn't say emerging markets. So.
Yeah, you're true. Something that we debate
on the investors
to
podcast.
No end on the investors podcast. Yeah, cool.
You can have both.
So you got yeah, true. Yeah, do you got any other questions for Drew before we ask him for his ideas?
I think that gives us a little rundown on what dividend stocks are and why people choose to add them to their portfolios. So. Maybe if we share your picks and then maybe some resources where people can actually find this information for themselves as well.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I have one comment I picked up from a presentation recently, which was we just saw, so the last decade, maybe the last two decades, have seen capital growth dominate the total return. So if the ASX did 9, 10%, about 8 or 80% of that came solely from capital growth, similar in the US where it was, you know, Apple, Microsoft, Google, continuing to grow rather than paying out income. And then all this data and analysis has shown that after periods where growth dominates that much, income tends to dominate returns for the next decade following it. So I think income and dividends will likely be more important than ever the next decade.
That's interesting. Yeah, right. Okay.
Just trying to delay my ideas.
Yeah, so let's try and... This is like Shark Tank where we're like the sharks and Drew's...
Yeah, so Drew hasn't actually told us his ideas.
Yeah, so we are... This is blank canvas, mate. So
we're a bit out there.
What's numero one? What's number one?
First one I'll lead with. It's not my strongest.
Okay.
I've gone for Wesfarmers.
Ooh. Yeah. WES is the ticker symbol.
Yeah, 3.7% dividend yield at the moment.
Yeah, at the time of recording.
Yeah,
yeah.
Plus a franking. It's been hasn't changed too much, and then the franking is about 100 or fully franked. So, on the top of my head, it comes out at like a 5.2 maybe percent.
Yeah. We'll just say 5% for round figures.
Just off the top of your head.
So you can check this by the time it goes live because we are recording this a little bit in advance. But can you just start by telling us what Wesfarmers is or what it does?
Bunnings. Simplest way to think about Wesfarmers, Bunnings. And then if you want to. If you want to make them sound interesting, they also own Officeworks. They're investing about $1 billion into a lithium mine outside of Western Australia or in Perth.
It's a bit random.
Well, they've always had some exposure to some of that stuff.
They used to have coal, but they sold their coal. So Wesfarmers is just the original conglomerate. So West Australian invested in a multitude of businesses. They leveraged up and bought Coles. I think it was like 2012. 2000 or maybe
I think it was 2007. Yeah.
And then listed it again on the ASX.
So they bought it and sold it, yeah.
We kind of consider them one of the best capital allocators on the ASX. So I think you talk about, what's it called, Lindsay Partridge.
Brickworks. Yeah. Go. I'm drinking water, sorry.
They're almost like a listed investment company, but they just own and operate businesses. So Bunnings, lithium mines, industrial services, so like leasing equipment to miners.
Kmart?
Officeworks, Kmart. And catch of the day, so they bought catch of the day.
Should have led with Kmart.
It's not doing very well.
Yeah, we don't talk about Kmart.
Profits falling there. And then they went online, they bought catch of the day or catch group. Have you had him as a guest before?
No.
Is it Leibovitz?
Okay, is it? Right.
And I think the one, the bidding war for the Australian pharmaceuticals. So that's like supplying... Yeah.
Priceline and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
So diverse range, and I think that's probably key to why I picked them as a dividend stock, that they have, while Bunnings dominates revenue or earnings at like 80%, they've got multiple sources of income.
Mm. It's interesting here, the word diversification comes up again because we talk about having a diversified portfolio, but you're also picking a company that's diversified within itself.
Exactly. You want to protect, you want to reduce as much risk as you can. And if you're relying on it for dividends and you think there might be less growth as a result, you want to make sure the companies that are backing that dividend or the operations backing it aren't, you know, aren't going up and down every month. They're not relying on a single commodity price or anything like that.
Mm. Yeah. Wesfarmers is like a family favorite. You said something before about capital allocators, which is not a phrase that we use that often on the show, but can you just tell us what you mean by that?
So the way management is using the profit or the retained profit of that company to reinvest in themselves, whether that's, you know, going acquiring a business, adding a new source of operations, finding new streams and new customer bases within. And they've got seven businesses. I think six of them were growing, Kmart being the only one. That's why I didn't leave with Kmart. But yeah, how is that management using the money that they're creating or the profits they're creating to grow their business going forward?
Yep.
And you want growing earnings to support a growing dividend at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have a link in the show notes to this, like for this episode, where you can follow along, and we'll have in that, maybe we'll put in some like charts and some resources like the annual report and all that. So you can go and learn about Wesfarmers if you want, and you can see how the company's performed over time. Drew, that's a pretty good one. I feel like Wesfarmers is probably my top 10 dividend stocks on the ASX, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we say there's like five, or I say there's five Australian leaders that would be leaders on a global scale. Wesfarmers, CSL, BHP, and I'll leave the other two out for the moment.
Okay, so that's a good one. So Wesfarmers, WES is the ticker symbol. You'll find that on the ASX. I'm guessing all of these are on the ASX.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, are you happy with that, Kate? You got any more questions?
No, sounds good to me.
Cool. Numero two.
The next one, I'd be wary of using by itself.
Okay, so add it to a portfolio, not as a portfolio. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't think anything we're mentioning today you would have your entire portfolio.
Yeah, just full disclaimer. Yeah, we would put this in a diversified portfolio, or all of them. We don't know what this one is.
But it is itself diversified, though.
Okay. But still, you want a few different holdings. Like you deal with a lot of retirees. They might have $1-3 million in their superannuation or saved up over their life. You're hardly going to put all of that in one dividend stock.
When I say it'll provide context.
Okay. It's a rocket ship.
Correct. We'd always have, you know, 15 to 20 stocks is what we'd have in an ASX listed portfolio generally.
And then you've got all the other parts like the bonds and the cash.
30
and
other investments around it as well. So highly diversified, which means this would be a stock would probably be 2% of a total portfolio, one individual stock.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that context is important.
Right. Now I'm scared.
What is it? AFIC. So Australian Foundation and listed investment company.
I thought you were going to say Soul Pats or
something. Oh, well, maybe. So AFIC, we talked about this on the show.
Yeah, we did an ETF deep. Yeah. Lick deep dive into it.
Lick deep dive.
Okay. We'll put a link.
We'll put a link to the thing that we did where we reviewed this. But tell us a little bit about it. For those who haven't heard of it, they might have seen it in the Barefoot Investor or even, you know, somewhere online, a friend tells them about it, whatever.
So a listed investment company that essentially goes out and holds a portfolio of other ASX listed companies.
Yeah.
Quite simple. It's taxed as its own entity, or it pays its own dividends and receives dividends and manages a portfolio of ASX listed shares. So you have a quick look at what it looks like, and it's CBA, BHP, CSL, Transurban, Macquarie, all the biggest. It's essentially very similar to an index fund, but you're buying it in a more unique wrapper on the ASX.
Yeah. I actually didn't know this until someone wrote into me, because I talked about it on Self Wealth Live, and they have actually got some US holdings as well in there. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Usually hidden below the top 25.
So it's a company that you can invest in on the ASX. But that company itself doesn't have its own business. It just goes and buys other companies, like shares of other companies.
And the benefit of that is that they're able to smooth the dividend payments that you receive.
So when it harvests the dividends, it can stream them.
Exactly. So it doesn't just pass through like a trust would just pass through if you're buying an ETF, or everything just gets passed through to your capital gains.
Yeah, regardless of timing or whatever.
Yeah. And if you're trading, you get capital gains. This one is, it all sits within that company. If there's a capital gain, it's a profit of the company, and the company itself declares a dividend. And that's why essentially the dividend didn't drop at all during COVID and during the, when it, you know, the banks cut their dividends by 50%, they basically kept it stable all the way through. And I kind of had that precursor that I wouldn't hold it as the only holding, because I've seen quite a few people come into us with just an LIC or two,
one, yeah.
And that's the only way they're getting income, and we're very, you know, concerned about that. So our advice is always to add more diversification around it.
Yeah.
That was where the probably should have led with that.
Yeah. No, I like that. That's a good one. Another solid one. Like you,
yeah,
yeah. It's a,
so it's similar to your A200 or your VAS ETF in terms of holdings, though it has a bit of international exposure, as we've discovered.
Yeah. I think it's outside the top 25, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, not a lot. It'd be, I think, maybe 5% or so. And then you can get their full financial statements, I think, and see those smaller holdings at some point.
Well, you didn't tell us the dividend.
3.2% plus franking, so not significant, probably slightly below the below the ASX, which I think is about 3.5, 3.6.
Yeah, but not all the ASX is fully franked. So
yeah,
with the extra franking, you might get it just above.
But it's smoother. So when BHP goes up and down, or when CBA cuts, this is just going to continue.
Yeah,
and they're very wary of ever dropping that dividend. So that's kind of why.
That's why it's slower to go up, because they don't want to bring it back down.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one. So the ticker symbol for that is AFI. We call it AFIC. Because it's Australian Foundation Investment Company, but it's AFI on the ASX. So that's a really interesting one, because we talk, if we mention an investment, probably 90% of the time it's an ETF and 10% it'd be an LIC.
Yeah.
So this is a good one. Like, it's good to mix it up. And we had a lot of people say like AFIC is something that they've always wanted to know about. So it's a good one. So far we've got Wesfarmers, which is kind of like, you said conglomerate was the word you used before. It's kind of like a company that holds other companies.
Like Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah, just like Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. And then you've got AFIC, which goes and buys shares of other companies. What's new?
General theme.
What's number three?
Right, I call this one Back to the Future.
Oh, should we guess? Should we guess what that means?
We'll each get a guess.
Back to the Future.
Stick to the ASX 50. Maybe even 20.
Oh. Macquarie? What do you think it is?
Not a chance.
Oh,
for you.
Okay.
I do like Macquarie, but...
CSL?
Not this time.
You already said CSL, so you're probably not going to...
What is it?
Telstra.
Oh, no.
Back to the Future.
You said boring, but Jesus.
How is one of the fastest growing technology companies in Australia boring?
What? Telstra? Is it really?
Profit. Oh, and free cash flow growth. No.
Okay, not sales growth. Okay.
No, not customer growth.
So, tell us a little bit about Telstra.
Well, this is why, it just increases dividend for the first time in 7 years.
Oh, wow.
So, something's changing at Telstra. There's movement. And now the dividend's still 3.8 plus franking. I'm not going to guess that one.
Yeah.
I said 5.3. I reckon it's probably 6%.
Let's just go 5.
Plus 2.
Let's just say everything's nearly 5.
5 or more. But it's, you know, it's had a terrible 15 years. Sorry, Andy Penn. And is it Vicky Brady? Is it Nikki or Vicky Brady?
Yeah, we'll just go with both of those. Yeah. Andy Brady.
Terrible, like 10 years. And part of the problem was they always paid out all of their profit as dividends. And they never reinvested. And then they got to a point where competition started to come in. The NBN came in, which has basically stripped out part of their business. But they're finally at a point where most of that disruption is gone. They've got free cash flow growth growing. They've got the best network in 5G. You know, we were in Tasmania a few weeks ago. Vodafone had no chance down there. Yeah. And you had to have Telstra. In a lot of places, you still have to have Telstra. Profits up. They're about to realize the value of their long-held kind of infrastructure. So their mobile towers, their data centers, they're freeing up capital and focusing more on the growth opportunities.
So rather than investing in those new towers, now they can keep some of that money.
Yeah, sell off half of it. Pension funds like Australian Super, these sort of groups love buying anything that has a regulated income stream. So they're realizing capital in that and allowing them to double down. You know, digital infrastructure and 5G is like the infrastructure of what we're doing. To make it back to the future. That's why.
I'm
overselling it, aren't I? Yeah.
With all the like the Amaysims and the Aldi Mobile and the Circles.
That's more in. So most of their growth's coming from mobiles and 5Gs. So the challenge with the NBN and the direct, most of the, what do you call it, the direct modems or the direct connections into houses barely make any money either. And the challenge, there might be a tailwind in the NBN that they're finally riding down the value of the NBN. Because they were looking to increase the price, which obviously everyone makes the same amount of money out of NBN sales, which is basically nothing. I think it's like 4 or 5%. So that's a potential tailwind, but that business has already been destroyed. So that's where they can go with the rest of it. Telstra Ventures, which has been
venture capital.
I think they backed FTX, unfortunately.
Oh boy!
As a small holding in a venture capital portfolio, diversification remains. Yeah. Key to that. But yeah, Telstra Health is a growing part, so connecting hospitals and the years of spending billions on CapEx just to keep your communication towers starts to disappear.
CapEx, man, capital expenditure. What? Yeah.
I feel like the question is that discussion, if you're getting a good dividend but your stock price is falling, the money you've invested will fall in value, but you still might be getting a good dividend. Because as far as I know, the Telstra share price over the last...
We don't have this in front of us, by the way.
10 years.
Well, it floated about $6.80, so I think, at one point.
The first time it hit the ASX, yeah. But that was a long time ago.
I was in 2005, maybe. I've been in this for a while.
That's when you started as an advisor.
We should get the share price chart up.
Yeah, while Drew does that, just to confirm one thing...
$4.
Okay. Yeah. So, but it would have paid some of that, all of that basically covered, the rest of it covered in dividends.
All your income, all your return has been from dividends from Telstra.
Yeah.
So what you're saying now is that what I'm trying to say, is that the company has finally been reset. You know, when the NBN first came out in 2007, was that 2007 as well?
I think the NBN was later. I think
2012.
Yeah, maybe even 2012. Yeah.
Essentially, in Telstra. Primary school back then.
Yeah.
They were talking too long.
Not me. I'm an old guy.
Well, they were told then to separate their business, structurally separate, sell off their infrastructure, remove the monopoly, and they said no and didn't even bid for the NBN. So it could have been, and that triggered 10 years of just being competed out of the industry and selling off their copper wires and not being able to make any money. So
yes.
There
you go.
I see the digital infrastructure theme as being pretty powerful and 5G central to that.
So what's actually happened, just for people that are playing along and don't know the story, Telstra was originally owned by the government and was paid to put pits in. Those are those rectangular looking little pits that you see on the sidewalk all throughout Australia. And that was over the course of decades. And that was super labor intensive, expensive, hence why the government paid for it back in the day as Telecom Australia or something.
Yeah.
And then Telstra inherited those assets, we call it the copper wire, the copper pits, all around Australia. So it was effectively a government-like business that was on the ASX. And so that's what made it really appealing was that-
Monopoly.
Your Aussie Broadbands, your Vodafones, your TPGs, even your Optuses of the world had to pay Telstra, what we call wholesale rates. Telstra was obviously regulated to a certain level, but then when the NBN was going to be rolled out, which was fibre, they basically had to replace that backbone with fibre optic cable, right?
Yeah.
And Telstra said, nah, we're not doing it. We're not going to even try and bid for it.
They should have just done it
in the end, yeah. But then the NBN Co. had to be created. The government had to be to roll that out. And there was two different governments. You probably remember this, Kate. Labor said, we're going to rebuild everything from scratch. Everything will be rebuilt, and it's going to be like tens of billions of dollars, which they probably should have done that as well. But then the new government came in, the Liberals, and said, we'll just do fiber for most of it. And then that's what we've got with the NBN now.
Patchy speeds and super expensive.
Yeah. And so what happened is when Telstra gave that up, like when the NBN Co. came in, they had to, I think it was like 10 or 15 years, they had to pay Telstra basically to relinquish that. So they had to pay them a certain amount of money to say, hey, we're taking your assets, we're taking your assets, we're taking your assets, because otherwise Telstra just would have almost imploded.
Yeah.
So not only that, then Andy Penn came in as CEO and said, why do we have 113 phone plans? Let's make it
1,800.
Like 1,800 phone plans. Yep. Why don't we make it like five?
I got it to eight.
Yeah, well, eight.
Or 12.
So then why don't we just simplify Telstra's business? And at the same time, so basically my understanding is Telstra took the money that they were getting from their copper pits and all that sort of stuff, took that money and paid to roll out their own 5G mobile, thinking that everyone's going to go to mobile anyway. So we'll just take their money and make it mobile.
That's why all your modem, your NBN modems have got 5G backups.
Yeah.
Like, and they're all backed by Telstra generally. So.
Yeah. So then your question about Amazium Circles, I think you're the only one I know that uses a Circle.
Sure, it has many other customers.
Oh, it does have at least one other. So, but everyone rides over the top of those networks.
Yeah.
So they none of them pay for their own. Vodafone would and Optus would pay for their own towers and that sort of stuff.
Like just white labeled.
Yeah, but they still need to connect to the NBN some way. Even Telstra needs to connect to the NBN some way.
Yeah.
Because it's more efficient to send via fibre than it is via the airways.
But I think your point is right, though. You don't want to buy a dividend stock that's losing.
Yeah. You don't want to cannibalise your capital.
Yeah.
So most people that have got it have probably got a return of 8% for the last 5 years, but it's all been dividend.
Yeah.
And you got no growth out of it. So it depends on your objective and if you can offset that with growth somewhere else. But I think, and my view is that it is entering a period where it has the potential to grow. And that comes because it reset its dividend. It used to pay 7% or 8%. Now it's paying 4%. So it's kind of reset its dividend and hopefully reinvesting to allow the dividend to grow finally again.
Do you have the dividend in like cents or dollars? Can you pull that up? Because the thing about this is what a lot of people probably have missed the salient point here, which is that you don't need much growth if your dividend is meaningful. So if you've got a 5% dividend with franking credits, you probably only need 3% growth over time to then get like a good, respectable 8% return.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think like that, though. They think, oh, I need my stock price to go up 20% per year for the next 5 years for it to be good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not necessarily how it works.
Yeah, you just don't want to be enticed in with a good dividend to a dying company.
Yeah
the old robbing Peter to pay Paul type trick out of one pocket and in the other.
Dividend 16 cents for the last 4 years.
16?
Before that, it was 30. So that's when in 2018, they essentially cut it in half. Share price tanked. They did what retirees did not want them to do. And that allowed them to reset. That was when the worst of the NBN was kind of hitting.
Yep.
Reinvest, do all the, start simplifying your business. And then it's slowly increased for the first time.
You mentioned payout ratio at the start of the show. That's the amount of money that is taken from the profit pool every year and paid back as dividends. I remember that Telstra's was like 90-something percent. They were taking basically every single drop of profit they had and just saying, here go shareholders, here go shareholders, here go shareholders.
Yeah.
And that is why then eventually push came to shove, they had to give it up.
Yeah.
They couldn't possibly. And that's to your point, Kate. You don't want to buy a dividend stock that has a falling share price, but you also don't want a dividend stock that then cuts its dividend. So you have to find a balance between like a sustainable balance between dividends and growth, which a lot of people just go, 10% dividend, I'll buy that. And then it gets cut in half.
Well, that's a yield trap. There's a lot of that in mining companies at the moment where you've got great, coal, I think you covered recently. They've got incredible strength in the coal price, but dividends will fluctuate with the price of that single commodity.
Yeah. So, interesting. So, you've got, this is TLS. TLS on the ASX. So, we've got Wesfarmers, which is like what we call industrial, so it kind of does a bit of everything. We've got a listed investment company in AFIC, or AFI is the ticker symbol, which is like a company of companies.
Yeah.
And then we've got Telstra, which is a telecommunications business.
A future-facing telecommunications business.
We'll have to do some more research into Telstra. Do you own it now?
What, do you own any of these? Yeah.
Yes, Wesfarmers and Telstra, not AFI.
Yeah. Money where your mouth is, I like it. Yeah. I don't own any of them. Do you own any of them?
No.
If you own VAS, you do.
Yeah. Well, if we own, in which case, yes. If you were to pick any of these, which one would you pick? Just as like, which business? You don't have to pick which stock.
Clearly not Telstra.
Probably Wesfarmers, because AFI replicates a lot of what I've already got in my ETF portfolio.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I'll have a look at Telstra, Drew. I'll do some homework over the summer.
Past performance is no predictor of future performance.
Yeah, in the other way.
Hopefully.
Here.
Yeah,
I'd probably go Wesfarmers too, just because I like the business. I think the business, the management team are really like,
I love Officeworks.
A+. The best businesses often don't always turn out to be good investments. Like Kmart, I love Kmart, but it's a pretty terrible
really
business.
Bad.
Like when you think about it, they have no profit margin because they're selling spoons for free, basically.
Essentially.
So
yeah. I think Drew said he had a bonus for us.
Oh,
I did have a bonus. It was right out there though.
Okay, so this is like not, this is just like pop it on your watch list, research it yourself kind of thing.
Exactly. And then when you're trying to build a broader portfolio, you want income sources from other asset classes, not just equities. This is probably a portion of both.
Equities equals shares. Yep, go on.
BHYB. BH. No, BYHB.
BYHB.
Yep.
I don't think I know what that is.
BYHB. What the heck is that?
Hybrids.
Oh.
So it's the hybrid tracking benchmark ETF from BetaShares.
Oh,
you're going to have to do some explaining here, Drew, because I don't think we've ever talked about hybrids on the finance podcast.
Did you say BHYB?
BYHB, I think it is.
BYHB.
Yeah, I think,
okay.
I hope.
Okay, go.
Check that.
So
preference share is like a hybrid is a preference share. A preference share is a version of the equity or like an ordinary share is, but it has parts of it are like a bond or a term deposit. Not anywhere near like the risk of a term deposit, but it pays a 6-monthly interest payment linked to the cash rate or the bank bill swap rate that you receive every 6 months and can convert to equity in worst case scenario. So people say it's a combination of shares and bonds at the same time.
So that's why, hence why hybrid.
Yeah.
If any viewers of Vampire Diaries, you know that you can get a hybrid between a werewolf and a vampire. You know what I'm talking about, Drew. You get it.
I'm not that old.
Vampire Diaries.
You watch Vampire Diaries?
No, I don't.
But he knows what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's
Twilight, wasn't it?
Twilight? Did they have hybrids as well? I don't know. I can't remember. But anyway.
The kid.
The kid.
It was like human and vampire.
Oh, yes. It was. It died. Anyway, so
I find it. I put this in because everyone's worried about inflation and interest rates going up and what impact that has. So
major bank hybrids ETF
preference shares pay a coupon or pay their interest payment on a set margin. So that could be 2% above the bank bill swap rate. The bank bill swap rate is similar to say the RBA's cash rate, which is 3.1%. So if you think it's 3.1, they pay 2% more than that. You're getting 5.1%. Fully franked every 6 months from this portfolio of assets.
How much did you say?
The yield at the moment is actually 5.9.
Okay.
So why would I go for a hybrid over something like AFI, which is diversified shares paying a dividend, or just a bond portfolio?
You're giving up, in the case of shares, you're giving up growth. So you're not taking, there's very little equity upside. When they're first issued, they're issued at $100 and they'll trade around that, but they'll be bought back in 5 to 7 years at $100.
In the case of bonds?
In the case of hybrids.
Yeah.
That's the similarity to bonds. Right. But they have a conversion clause that if a bank was in significant trouble, they could be converted to equity. Why they're seen as higher risk than bonds. Whereas bonds, you just paid back. They're never going to be converted to equity if you own a bond. So it's halfway between, in terms of comparing to shares, you've got less volatility. And at the moment, probably a higher income. In terms of bonds, you've got more volatility, but a higher income. So it's kind of halfway between both. It's probably, and it's only income. So you're not getting any growth, no potential for growth. It's just a dividend that comes out. And it's linked to inflation or linked to interest rates.
Yeah.
I should have gone with this one first.
So interestingly, the reason that they're called preference shares, just so people know, the preference shares is the lingo in the US. You'll hear a lot like Warren Buffett buys preference shares of Goldman Sachs or something like this.
Yeah.
What it means is in the event that someone gets a dividend, they have preference. So they have to get a dividend. Say you're a shareholder in CBA, Kate, and Drew is a hybrids owner in CBA. If you get a dividend, Kate, he has to get one.
If they miss mine, they can't pay yours.
Yeah. He can get one even if you don't. But you cannot get one without him getting one as well. That's why they call it preference.
And most will accumulate. So if they miss one for me, they have to repay all the missed ones before they can pay you.
Yeah.
But it's never been a problem in hybrids in the banking sector for the last 20 years that I've seen.
So what they do is the banks use these things called hybrids because they sell them just like they would sell a bond or shares. If I'm the bank, I collect the $100 from Drew Now, I say to Drew, I'm going to give you this $100 back. However, if things get really bad, you can convert or I can convert you to a share and you'll just be like Kate and then you can go and sell.
Yeah.
And that's why they have the risk of a share, like your one that you have.
You could end up having shares in a
bank.
Yep. A worthless company.
Yep.
If something's going wrong.
Yep. But in the meantime, they have a bond-like return because it's almost, they guarantee you that you'll get a dividend.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. And the reason that banks do this in Australia is because they can take the money from Drew and they can put it on their balance sheet and say, look, we've got all this money that's safe because these investors have given us this money. And so when you look at bank annual reports, they'll say they've done stress tests and they've got all this money to protect themselves. It's basically from investors like Drew, that would give me the money. Yeah. And that's the loose.
Very much suited more to income and probably retiree portfolios.
Yeah. But we have we've had the hybrid managed fund or ETF in the RAS core portfolios for a while. That's something that, you know, in years gone by we switched across from bonds, even at higher risk, because it was a slightly different type of thing. There are some, I'm gonna have to pick a fight with you off air, Drew, about some other things, but I think that's a really interesting way for people just to try. It sounds really confusing, and it is. A lot of professionals still get a little bit confused about this stuff, but you can just think of it as like the next step along in terms of getting income.
Definitely.
From a different, slightly different thing.
Yeah. So if people want to go and find companies in Australia that do have an income yield, I don't know what terminology,
there's so many places,
a dividend, like where would you look for that
info? My what I always use is ComSec. ComSec. I always, you know, all my filtering through ComSec, and then we use a bit of Morningstar that, you know, most of them have some sort of filter on dividends. Yeah. And then our approach internally is to always don't go outside the kind of ASX 100 when we're looking at core
just
income stocks.
One thing I'll give people another workaround for a hack is to use the VHY ETF from Vanguard.
You're copying.
I know you like the ETF too. I think I might own this one. You can look at that and then look at the holdings inside. Yep. Did you have this in your notes? Because I'm just making this up. No. So you can look at that ETF on the Vanguard website and it has to list all of the 70 or 80 dividend stocks that it owns. And then you can look at them and you can research them and see which ones you like from that list as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you want to get diverse range of companies and income sources. Yeah.
Not four banks.
Yeah. Yeah, two resource companies.
But people think that they're diversified because they're like, I own CBA, Westpac, NAB, and Macquarie. And you're like, well, you own all banks. You're not diversified. You might have four or five different stocks, but you're not diversified.
I'm so sure you've seen many people come to you just with like five different dividend stocks in your portfolio, and that's
definitely
it.
And it'd be like they could probably better off buying the ASX 200, but they'll hold three banks, BHP, Telstra, or maybe CSL. And they'll think they've done incredibly well, which, you know, falling interest rates has probably helped over that period.
Yeah, well, people that have owned CSL for the last decade or so.
It's hard to convince them, a lot of people, to change, even if the circumstances are changing, and even if you know that is more risk than they should be taking. So one company struggles, one industry struggles, their dividend could be hit, you know, 20% of their income source.
Mm.
You wouldn't do that in you know, retirement. You're trying to reduce those risks as much as possible.
But you see, a lot of those people that bought CBA and CSL and all those big BHPs in the 90s when CBA and CSL were floating or getting on the
ASX, $2 a share. Yeah.
They bought them and now they're up to $100. So it's easy that like those positions would bubble to the surface as like, you've made so much wealth for me, CBA. Thank you so much.
Although the capital gains to sell some of those positions that they've been holding for three decades. Yeah.
We try and get people to reduce, and we'll always recommend it. Our view is you only get a few chances to say everything you think.
Yeah. Do you just do it slowly over a few years?
Yeah, we think it should be here, and then over financial years you do it. If it's in super, that helps because a lot of that is tax-free, and you can sell it as you want. Then it's a different discussion. How do you convince someone to sell a portion of their most successful holding? But so many, so under-diversified or naively diversified, we probably talked about before, where you think it's, you're well diversified and not at risk, but definitely are.
Yeah,
we could do a whole session on that.
Yes, we can. Well, Drew, we've talked about a lot in this episode about dividend stocks, about passive income from the stock market. It's a wonderful feeling when you get meaningful dividend checks. You mainly deal with higher net worth or like people that are going on retirement, right? Yeah. In the financial planning. So I'm guessing it'd be more like a couple or a single approaching retirement, you know, probably over $1 million in superannuation at assets.
Yep. On average. Yep.
And they come to you, they get strategic advice as well as like investment advice.
an ongoing management as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you are in that bracket and you think that you want to speak to a financial planner, I always say that you need advice as you approach retirement, and ideally not the day that you hit retirement.
You'd be surprised.
Do it before.
I retire next week.
Yeah. Do it before that, because then it gives people like Drew and yourself the opportunity to actually make strategy like changes that are tax effective before you go into retirement, which is so important.
And use that legislation and the opportunities as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can find Drew at waddlepartners.com.au/contact. There's a form there that you can fill out if you want to get in contact. Otherwise, you can email him directly. He's also on the Australian Investors podcast with me every week. So you can ask us your questions on any of the RAS websites. There's a big button that says ask a question. If you just like the Investors podcast, and if that's where you want to hear from Drew, just go and do that. And that's a good way to get in contact. Cool. Well, that was fun, Kate.
Yeah.
Dividend stocks. Sounds like you've got a bit of reading to do over.
And hybrids.
Yeah, hybrids. Enjoy the 160-page documents that they come with.
I just remember at my last job, everyone being very confused about hybrids, including the investors. So like quite a complicated product.
Definitely. Yeah, they've got a PDS that's like 120 pages long.
Yeah.
But
So follow us on the Australian Investors podcast if you want to learn more about hybrids, but even dividend stocks. Those are some great names to put on your watch list.
We've got a whole passive income series.
We've did a passive income series. Yeah. If you create a free account or you have a free account on RASC, there's a thing that you get in the report section. You get a free report. So that's got Drew and I with the four-part series, full write-up with everything that goes along with that. So check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Drew, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's and great. Kate, as always, thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that RASC could help you in 2024. As many of you know, RASC has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at RASC, which is the launch of our RASC Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside RASC Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called RASC Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 RASC community members have begun the RASC plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that. But one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian Property Podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RASK Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nivexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASK users get 20% off an annual plan with Nivexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nivexa's software and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nivexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASK community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASK YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASK network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASK Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASK Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASC Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000. And hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASC and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASC network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.